Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is November 29th, 2010, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 182, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, in awe that the Mac Geek Gab has passed us to have episode number 300. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com.
Brian, how can you possibly be in awe that Mac Geek Gab has surpassed us a number of podcasts?
Well, because they started like 2 years after the show started.
Yeah, but apparently they have a tighter recording schedule than we do.
In that they record on a schedule? I guess I can see now how that would work.
Yeah, well, okay. Now, to be fair, we record every month.
We do. We do. Month in, month out.
And sometimes we record several times a month.
Sometimes. It hasn't happened recently, but sometimes.
Yeah.
But sometimes. Something, did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I absolutely did. Yeah. Spent it with friends, and it was a really nice event. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving, too.
I did. I played lots of Civilization V.
Oh, nice.
If you're a Civilization fan, this new version of the game, which just became available to the Mac last week, it's just hands down the game it always could have been. Well, I don't know. It's still not perfect. I say that. We talk about a night and day flip. It is the best the game has ever been, and I think it's incredible. It still has some areas where, you know, Civilization VI could make it all that much better. But it's so much better than the previous versions, and it's really fun, and it's a lot of fun. Good game. Did I recover okay? Because I don't think I did.
No, I think you recovered okay. I was just sitting here kind of a little bit in awe of your ability to so dramatically flip-flop on how you felt about the game and then flip-flop back. And are you sure that your medication dosage is okay?
Well, I did just start quaffing another latte keep me awake for the show.
Oh, okay. Well, once that one hits, then I bet you'll be able to flip-flop even faster.
We were talking about putting the story together. Jeff asked me what stories interested me, and I told him that I was really most interested in nap time, the story of sleep in blankets.
Which, by the way, is a fantastic story.
It's my favorite.
Yeah.
But it was not to be today.
I also really enjoyed the sequel, Special Nap Time on the Couch.
Ah, yes. That's a good one, too. That's a good one, too.
Yeah.
That's a good one, too. But instead, we are here to bring you episode 182 of the Apple Context Machine, and we have a couple of what I think are interesting stories to talk about. So let's get to it.
Okay, sounds great. Apple's iPad is eating into PC sales, and it turns out that iPhone owners are more loyal than Android phone owners.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Research firm Gartner has revised its PC shipment forecast for the next several years, including 2010, and the company is blaming the iPad. Even more interestingly, Gartner said that the PC industry's model of competing on price has stifled innovation, and that this lack of innovation is finally catching up to those companies. While PC shipments are still projected to see double-digit growth of 14.3% this year and 15.9% in 2011, both years are down from the 17.9% and 18.1% increases Gartner had previously projected. One of the analysts involved in the report was George Schiffler, who made what we think is one of the first examples of a mainstream comment acknowledging the PC industry's ugly little secret, namely that the race to the bottom is leading the PC industry nowhere fast. His full quote is worth hearing, so bear with me. Quote, PCs are still seen as necessities, but the PC industry's inability to significantly innovate and its over-reliance on a business model predicated on driving volume through price declines are finally impacting the industry's ability to induce new replacement cycles. As the PC market slows, vendors that differentiate themselves through services and technology innovation rather than unit volume and price will dictate the future. Even then, leading vendors will be challenged to keep PCs from losing the device limelight to more innovative products that offer better dedicated computer capabilities, unquote. Our translation of all that is, huh, looks like the future belongs to Apple after all.
And it turns out iPhone owners are more than twice as loyal to their smartphone OS than owners of Android-powered devices. That's according to a survey from the German market research firm GfK. The firm found that 59% of iPhone owners planned to stay loyal to iOS, whereas only 28% of Android device owners would say the same. Of the remaining platforms, BlackBerry was the surprise, at least to us, number two platform with... Did you just hear that?
What? Who? When? How? I didn't say anything underneath you there. Huh. When you were talking about the number two platform.
Okay, I'm sure you didn't.
I'm sure I didn't.
Okay, yeah. Well, as I was saying, BlackBerry turned out to be the number two platform with 35% OS loyalty, 21% for Microsoft's Windows Mobile Whatever Plus Hugs, and 24% for Nokia's beleaguered Symbian OS. The survey was conducted in Brazil, Germany, Spain, the UK, the US, and China, where Apple's iPhone is apparently the fairest of them all.
And that sound means that we won't be announcing Research in Motion as a sponsor anytime soon. I think we can safely say that.
And I just got hate email from Nokia, which is crazy because the podcast hasn't even gone out yet.
I know. That's really weird how that happened.
Yeah.
That's really weird. So are we really only doing two stories today?
Yeah, but they're two really good stories.
Well, that's true. We were talking about, of course, about throwing something about Angry Birds into the podcast because it seems like anything we do with Angry Birds gets just a ton of readers.
It does. And, you know, we could probably do an Angry Birds episode and it would be one of our highest ranked ever.
It probably would be. We could do a story at TMO about, you know, Steve Jobs seemed playing Angry Birds on Apple campus and like it would be our like biggest story of all time.
Oh yeah. It would probably end up on the front of Google News for days.
For days, yeah. It's the trifecta, I think, of link baiting. Steve Jobs, Apple, Angry Birds.
Yeah, I'm thinking so. But hey, you know, as long as we're not gratuitously talking about Angry Birds.
Us?
Angry Birds?
Why would we gratuitously mention Angry Birds?
I don't know why we would do that with Angry Birds.
No, actually, seriously, all gratuitous and joking aside, did you see that piece that I wrote up last week about, is right before the holiday break, about the Israeli comedy show that sort of did a real-life Angry Birds sketch?
That was brilliant.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it was. It was fantastic on many levels. First, it was just generally funny. But then as a commentary on the political strife that's going on in that region right now, it was brilliant.
It was very, very it was very subtle. And you know, I can't imagine that well, you know, all comedy shows dabble in politics on occasion But that aside, the way they were able to take the game animation and mechanics and make that into something being acted out by human actors was just, I thought, hilarious.
Yeah, and the costumes are fantastic too.
Yeah, the costumes are great. Yeah, it was good. We have a link in the show notes.
Oh, good for us. And good for our listeners, so you can go find it. Be careful if you're watching it at work, because there
is some profanity, yeah.
Yeah, and you know how prude some bosses can be.
That's true. Not to mention the guy in the cubicle next to you, he's such a prude.
He really is. By the way, he's been talking about you behind your back.
Yeah, I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it. He'll pay just like all the rest. Wait, was that my out loud voice?
Oh, and what's that say about me laughing at the soon to be inflicted misfortune of others?
Or you know, pretend misfortune. But anyway, be that as it may, let's talk about the Gartner story.
Okay. So, you know, I'm really glad that when you wrote up this piece, which, by the way, you did a fantastic job on it.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, credit where credit is due. But I really liked how you made sure that you pointed out that there's analysts that are looking at what's going on and has been going on in the PC market for years, and they're going, yeah, this race to the bottom, this is turning out to be kind of a bad thing.
Yeah, and what really struck – so the basic story was that Gartner was lowering forecasts basically because they say that the media tablets, which, you know, as we all know right now, is the iPad, since the iPad's got, like, what, 75% of the market? 95%
yeah,
of the market?
Yeah.
It's probably a little tiny bit lower now, because I think that Samsung was able to sell a dozen or two of the tabs, at least. Or then that's, I guess, if you're counting all the websites out there that reviewed them.
Oh, so there must have been like 6 or 7 websites that reviewed them then.
At least. And anyway, so the in theory, the story was about the iPad / tablet taking PC sales away. And, you know, Gartner on the 15th of October put out another little sort of blog post talking about the tablet and how they're saying that anyone looking at the tablet as a dumbed-down computer is wrong, and that they really should be looking at it as a hopped-up smartphone. And I thought that was a pretty salient observation.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
Their point is that people are using tablets, i.e. the iPad, not like a computer, but they use it more like the way they use their smartphones. Again, I think that's pretty wise. And so it's not that Gartner doesn't get all this stuff, but, you know, Gartner has often dismissed, or to me, they've appeared dismissive of Apple for a long time. And we've got all these analysts out there that, yeah, I mean, you know, it wasn't that long ago when they were all saying that Apple has to get out of the hardware business and do the Microsoft thing.
You know, what a myopic statement that was. Myopic, excuse me. What a myopic statement that was.
Yeah, for years people said that. I mean, and we're talking about after Steve Jobs came back. We're talking about the early 2000s. You know, Apple has got to license out Mac OS X. They've got to get out of the hardware business. They can't compete on price. You know, they'll never be able to compete on price, and they should just license Mac OS. I mean, this was a constant litany from a lot of people, many of whom were, you know, get paid significant six-figure salaries to show the world just how ignorant they are.
You know, I'd be happy being stupid for the world if I was making that kind of money.
It's true. It's true. As it is, I have to be content with showing the world how stupid I am, making significantly less.
Yeah. Well, you know, we all have our crosses to bear, Brian.
We do. And part of that whole litany that used to come from everywhere else was that the only way to compete is based on price, and the only way to compete is to you know, is to basically to buy into Microsoft's vision of how to do business.
You know, I find it interesting just how this pattern just it just keeps coming up and replaying itself over and over with analysts saying, well, Apple needs to do what the rest of the industry has been stumbling through. And then Apple says, oh, we're going to do our thing instead. And mm-hmm. then the analysts go, oh, well, that's not going to work because they're not doing what everyone else has been doing all along. And then all of a sudden, Apple's really successful with something. And then the analysts are going, oh, well, look, everyone's now doing what Apple was doing. And, you know, we had that, well, now with the iPad, with analysts saying, well, how can Apple possibly make a tablet that's better and people want to buy? Just looking at what had already been put on the market, which was primarily Windows jammed into a tablet form factor.
Yeah, and by all means, I think that Microsoft should get a lot of credit for trying to make tablets work. You know, I mean, bless their one Microsoft way hearts. Yeah, they approached it from a standpoint that the market did not embrace and that is, I don't know, I mean, Steve Jobs and Tim Cook or whomever, I guess it was Steve, that said if you have to have a stylus, you failed with a tablet, right?
Right.
And, you know, and that was definitely one of Microsoft's problems. And, yeah, they didn't do it right, but at least they tried. I mean, they tried to open up that market. They just couldn't do it.
No, you're right. They couldn't. And I think to get that market to open up, what it really was going to take and did take was a company that had total control as opposed to the way the market was being pushed, which was designed by committee.
Yes, and designed by multiple committees at that.
Right, and that's why the UMPC was a dismal failure. But if you look at what the concept was, okay, Microsoft had a really great idea, but...
You know, I always pronounce that as the un-PC. I thought that was supposed to be the un-PC.
I always thought it was an acronym, UMPC.
Oh, UM? I thought it was UN.
No, it's UM.
Is it? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, then, I accept small quantities of money to display my ignorance to the world.
But, you know, you're cute, so there's that.
Wasn't there an un-PC also?
Oh, there probably is. Which means that now I'm getting paid little, just like you, to be ignorant. Boy, we are so qualified for this job.
Let's see here. Top hit on Google, Utah National Parks Council. Un-PC lesbian is the second choice. Un-PC Netlingo, the internet. Yeah, anyway. When I'm not finding an NPC, so I'm totally, I think I'm wrong. Be that as it may, I think we were talking about mainstream analysts and stuff. Let's look at, there's one sentence in particular, just that to me is just striking to be coming from a mainstream company like Gartner. And that's, as the PC market slows, vendors that differentiate themselves through services and technology innovation, rather than unit volume and price, will dictate the future. That sentence right there is basically saying Apple.
Yeah, that's exactly what that's saying.
And when you have a mainstream analyst saying that Apple's doing it right and everybody else is doing it wrong, or that the way everybody else is doing it is going to lead to death and destruction, that is such a striking change from the old mainstream view, which was that Apple does everything wrong. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a polar shift. It's a sea change, even.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's very telling for the PC industry as a whole when you have all these analysts that have been saying, do it the Microsoft way or you're going to fail. And now they're starting to jump ship and say, well, Apple's got the better way.
Right. And of course now, I mean, you know, the PC industry is so mature. you and I, we have said this so many times, both here on the show and in, you know, in things that we've written, in the talks that we've given. I want Apple to have more whole widget competitors, not fewer.
You know, I've been holding out hope for HP to be a really good competitor in that whole widget market ever since they bought WebOS. However, after seeing their first Slate offering, where I have to question the...
Well, that's Windows-based, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's their first version of this. Future versions are going to be running WebOS, but the hardware's there. And the hardware, I cannot understand how HP could have let that out the door. That is, HP makes some really good products. The Slate is not one of them. And one of the most glaring flaws, first, it requires a stylus.
But that's the part of this, that's Windows.
Right, but it gets better. There's no place to store the stylus.
Huh.
So here's a company that I've been hoping would be the iPad competitor, and they can't even ship a piece of hardware that has a silo for the stylus.
Well, to be fair, when you and I have talked about WebOS and the fact that we're excited to see what HP might be able to do with it, we've actually usually been talking within the context of a smartphone and not a tablet.
Yeah, but I keep tablet in the back of my mind.
Fair enough. And I honestly, I don't expect – I still have high hopes for WebOS and for the potential that it offers, but I don't think that that's going to be within the – again, with to use the word context, it's going to be within the context of the PC world. I think it's going to be in the mobile world, and – that's kind of where we were talking about. I don't think that HP is the company to beat Apple in the computing space with the whole widget, but they may be able to at least compete, especially doing well in the corporate space with a whole widget smartphone/tablet. Despite the fact that I acknowledge everything you just said about their first tablet offering.
Well, they definitely have. A good reputation in the business market, and they definitely have a lot of customers there. So that would be a very easy place for HP to go and start building up market share for their tablet products.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, absolutely. But
how does this play into? Let's talk a little bit about. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm in my head. In my head, I'd already jumped to our other topic, and we're not even there yet. I have no idea.
How many more espresso shots do you have on your table?
just one, man.
But it's really big.
Oh, yeah, I'm good. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm getting hopped up now. It's going to be a good show. Give us a light, would you, sugar? So, idea, come here. Wait, I'm sorry. That's a different show altogether, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is. I think you're about to completely change our demographic.
I was maybe on the cusp.
Yes, I think you were.
Cusp. So, yeah. So we were talking about the fact that the computing industry is so mature right now. I mean, I kind of fear that Microsoft has sort of screwed the pooch for until we have a completely different paradigm for personal computing, because I don't think that we can ever get another whole widget computer out there to compete. I mean, it's pretty much it's Windows and Mac with Linux kind of clinging on to its small user base, and you know, there's IBM or you know, HP, or you know, let's just for the sake of giggles pretend that Dell has, you know, could whatever. you know, or some Chinese company or something. You know, no one else is going to be able to bring something to market, be able to get a real foothold, and not in the computing space. And so let's hope that the tablet space or the mobile space or whatever this emerging smartphone / tablet ecosystem kind of thing is going to be. Let's hope that maybe someone can come up with some really good competition for Apple.
We can hope, but I'm having a hard time picturing who's going to be able to do that. I don't think it's going to be so much that a company comes along that makes a product that's so great that Apple's suddenly going, oh, crap, how do we keep up with that? I think what's going to get other companies market share is that there's a lot of people out there that have the it's good enough mentality and will buy crappy tablet computers or tablet devices because they're just good enough.
Well, that's an interesting thought, Jeff. I don't think I told you about this, but I was talking with a friend of mine about smartphones and tablets. And we have long acknowledged that Android already has more market share than the iPhone. And yet, you know, at the same time, there's no individual phone that comes anywhere near the iPhone, right? And so, you know, we've got iPhone and we've got like all these myriad of Android devices, some of which are crappy, some of which are pretty cool. And but even the really cool ones don't sell on anywhere, not even a pale shadow of I'm mixing metaphors of what the iPhone does. And I think that Android and smartphones go together really well. More specifically, I think that when I'm doing a terrible job of explaining this.
I can't wait to see where you go with this.
It's good. It actually is good. This isn't one of those things where I'm going to peter out. Tablets, I think, are more dependent on the user experience than smartphones. By which I mean that when you have a smartphone, a phone is something that we basically have to have. You know, especially in the modern era where, you know, we have more and more people who have a cell phone but don't have any kind of landline. You know, you almost have to have a cell phone in contemporary society. And of course, if you have to have a cell phone, you want a cell phone that's as good as you can get. And
right.
And you want a phone that can get the access to the web. But the reality is we don't need it, but we want it. Some of us need it, but I mean, the vast majority of us don't need the capabilities of the iPhone. We just want it, right? You know, we want to be able to carry our music with us or, you know, access the internet, get our stock quotes or, you know, read up on news or, you know, play Angry Birds.
Angry Birds?
Angry Birds. yet a tablet is not something we have to have. And if it's not something we have to have, it has to offer some kind of experience that is so compelling that we want to have it. And I think that here, the value proposition offered by iPhone and the iOS ecosystem and the App Store has greater value, or I should say even greater value, than it does on the smartphones. All of which is a very, very long-winded, as only Brian can make it long-winded, way of saying that I don't think that Android tablets are going to come anywhere close to iPad sales, especially right now when Google doesn't even have. I mean, Google doesn't want people putting Froyo on tablets. They don't want people. I think Honeycomb is the first version, which is I think version 3.1. They either want 3 or version 3.1 to be used in tablets.
Yeah, so that's
it ain't out yet.
And what does that say about product manufacturers who are hearing Google saying, look, the version of Android that's out, not for tablets. And they're going, whatever. And they're making tablets.
Yeah, it's just, you know, that's... And they're going to lose money. The Galaxy Tab is going to be a failure. It's not going to just not be successful. It's going to be an abject failure, and it's because of what you just said. Because you know tablets aren't listening to Google. And so I made a bet to. So a lot of our listeners may be familiar with a guy that posts on our site. A reader named Brad Hutchings, who posts under the name Bosco, who's been a friend of mine for a long time. He and I philosophically disagree on a lot of things, in particular the value proposition of the whole widget versus the value proposition of open. And we've had a lot of engaging conversations in our article comments, but I made him a bet that he did not accept as of yet, but I think that Apple will maintain at least 70% market share. No, what did I say? 80% market share through 2011 for tablets and 70% through 2012. And it's because of this whole thing that I'm talking about, the value proposition offered by Android for the tablet space.
I'm looking forward to seeing if Brad takes you up on that bet.
I don't think he will. He did finally respond saying that he actually thinks I'm more or less right about at least some aspects of that. But whatever. The point is that what Apple's doing, what Apple is doing is not going to be easily replicable by anyone else.
No, it's not, and that's even with Apple having already done it, and so people can see what Apple has created, and they still won't be able to replicate it.
Just like they couldn't do it with the iPod either.
No, they couldn't. I mean,
you know, Google has more or less done it with smartphones, but again, I think that this is an issue. Not everyone has to have a digital media device. Everyone does have to have a cell phone, and now I'm going to lose my train of thought. There it goes. Bye.
Bye. See you. Well, thanks for playing Brian's train of thought.
So here's Gartner telling everybody that Apple's doing it right and it's too late for the computing industry. And I don't really see many people being able to do it, in the cell phone industry. Microsoft could have maybe, it's going to be really interesting to see what Windows 7, it is hard to keep track of what they call it. That's why we always joke the platform being called Windows Mobile, whatever. But I think it's currently called Windows Phone 7, which is like one of the worst names on the planet.
It's better than what it was.
What was before it was Windows Mobile Phone, Windows.
It was like Windows 7 Mobile. Personal experience or something like ridiculous that. Like that.
Yeah, and they kept changing it. Anyway, again, that's why we always joke about it being Windows Mobile, whatever. But with Windows Phone 7 and their entirely different approach, which I give them a lot of credit for trying a completely different interface concept from what the iPhone did, it's going to be interesting to see if they can get any kind of a foothold back in that market. Especially that they seem to be getting some screen time from major TV shows.
Yeah, they are.
Okay, do you see them in Bones?
I don't watch Bones, but I do watch Hawaii Five-0, and Hawaii Five-0 is iPhone Central.
Uh-huh.
Although in a couple of the more recent episodes that I've watched, and yes, I know it's a new series, so they're all recent episodes, but a couple of the most recent episodes, I think it's Dano, is running around with a Windows Mobile phone.
Interesting.
And when he uses it, it's like they're actually focusing on he's using a Windows Mobile smartphone.
You know, it's funny you should say that. because what I was thinking in my head was, like, you look at a show like Chuck, where whenever they show an iPhone, it's because they want to show the picture of the incoming call so that you know who it is that's calling.
Right, and you see the iPhone interface.
You see the iPhone interface, and usually you see, like, a picture of, you know, Strahotsky because she's, like, so hot. To let you know that it's her, or maybe it's someone else, and, you know, there'd be Chuck's picture. But it's a way of doing something within the story, right?
Sure.
But when I saw Windows 7 being used in Bones, it was a really gratuitous interface shot that, to me, the very first thing I thought of is that Microsoft paid for that. And I don't know. Apple does not pay for those placements, and it's possible that Microsoft doesn't either, but my guess is that they did.
Excuse me. Yes, that's how it felt in Hawaii 5.0.
Yeah, that's yeah. You were saying what I was thinking.
Yeah, and okay. So to throw out another comparison for the way product placement can happen, BBC did a 3-episode series. It's a reinterpretation of Sherlock Holmes, and there's a lot of people using iPhones in the show, and. The iPhones are there. You see them. You hear the iPhone sounds when text messages are coming through. You hear the click when the phone's being hung up. And when a call is coming in and you need to see the screen, you see the traditional Earth shot on the display. But it didn't feel like it was gratuitous at all. And there are definitely other phones in the show.
Right,
but it's very obvious that people had iPhones and that they were being used in the show, but it didn't feel gratuitous.
And of course, we definitely have a bias.
We do, but okay.
I mean, for one thing, iPhones are so much a part of our lives that there's a lot of things that we just sort of take for granted.
Right, but okay. So back to Hawaii 5.0 and the really gratuitous thing. Okay, when they stop a scene and have dialogue about using the phone, and so the one guy sitting there going, "Well, I really have a hard time typing. I'm trying to send a message." Well, just turn it sideways; it'll rotate, and you'll have more screen.
Oh my!
And oh look, I just did I just took a photo with my smartphone, and look, it's easy for me to send it. As an email or something.
Do you remember the movie Hackers?
Yes, I do.
And it was like a totally pro Apple movie, right?
Yeah, that was several years ago. Yeah,
it was a long time ago. It was a time actually when just about every hacker on the planet, or every would-be hacker, of course, was not using a Mac. But whatever. Do you remember the really really forced insertion about how the PowerPC was a faster processor?
I don't remember that, but now it's I'm going to exactly throw it on my, like, Netflix stream. Yeah,
exactly like what you're describing here with this forced Windows stuff. Only thing is that Apple didn't pay for that. Those were Apple fans that were that were making that part of the movie,
and so of course they had to toss in the you know, we're using a RISC processor, not a CISC processor. And
yeah, something to that effect. Yeah, so very, very forced like that. Interesting. You know what is not forced?
Please tell me.
Smile Software's disc label.
You know.
That was so forced.
Had she not started laughing, I bet we could have totally pulled it off.
Oh, good Lord. I love those guys.
I want to point out, we don't force them to be our sponsor. They choose to be our sponsor. did I save the segue?
Yes, sort of. Yeah. Although, you know, that doesn't necessarily say much for their taste.
Well, I like to think that the Smile team has excellent taste.
I'm sure they do.
I know they're fun people to hang out with.
They are very fun people to hang out with, and they make great products. And they are sponsoring this week's show, or this month's show, as the case may be. And disc label is the product.
Oh, okay. What an excellent choice for a product going into December.
Yeah, for the holidays, and for all the Thanksgiving movies that you made.
Right, the Thanksgiving movies you have, the movies that you've collected over the summer.
Who makes a
summer?
Thanksgiving movie? No one's making a Thanksgiving movie.
I think I have a friend that made a Thanksgiving movie. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm pretty sure that I saw an iPhone doing some recording the other night.
Hmm. Well, then your friend could make that into a movie and put it on a DVD or a CD to give to friends and family.
And make it look really sharp.
Make it look really, really slick.
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with Disc Label, it's an awesome product for creating CD and DVD and Blu-ray. It's compatible with everything. Labels that go onto the discs. And then also for making the cases that you will present the discs in. And it has a ton of templates, seasonal templates, very easy to use, very sharp, very professional looking.
Yeah, they've got a ton of themes. They're really easy to use. These guys know software. I mean, they're Mac people. They're Mac people, and they get the importance of interface. So Disc Label looks great. The themes are great. They're really, really really high quality. I mean, it's we said this a few times at the very least. I mean, it's a pleasure to be sponsored by a company making such great products, and makes it super easy to talk about. So when you're looking at helping Johnny put together the photo gallery with the Ken Burns effect and giving it to Grandma for a Christmas present, make it look sharp. Check out this label.
And you know what's even cooler?
What?
Our listeners can get a 30% discount.
That's amazing.
It is. So regular price is $35.95. I had to do some math in my head. Sorry. $35.95. And our listeners can get it for $24.95.
Right. 30% off right now.
Yes. But you have to go to the special webpage.
Which is?
SmileSoftware.com/AWR, which stands for Apple Context Machine.
Yes, it does. We, of course, have that link in the show notes for you to check out yourself. And, good company, good product, good discount. You should get it while you can.
Yes, please do. It's a great product, and the Smile people are awesome, so support them, please.
Yep. Alrighty, the next story, and by next I mean other, is
no, it would be next because we've talked about Angry Birds.
Oh, we did talk about Angry Birds, didn't we?
Yes, and after we talked about Angry Birds, then we talked about the Gartner Report.
We did, right. So the next story would be the story from GFK about iPhone owners being more loyal to the OS than everyone else. And the thing to me is, the iPhone is always tops in customer satisfaction. So it's not a surprise. The surprise to me is the way that the iPhone owners the percentages are to crush everybody else. Yep. I mean, they're more than twice as loyal as any other OS, except for BlackBerry, which is, what was my percentage? 46%. They're still 46% more loyal than BlackBerry users.
Yeah, and how many of those BlackBerry users are loyal like that because that's the device that they need, the platform that they need for business and work?
Well, I quipped in the story that there's still some juice in that in the phrase crackberry, and it's a lot of BlackBerry people are not happy with the way the platform hasn't really advanced, but I think there is a significant number of BlackBerry people who that's what they started with, that's what they want their keyboard. They wanted to do the corporate email. They don't give a crap about all the other stuff, and that's what they want. And I don't think that can be underestimated.
No, it can't. And for those people, BlackBerry is there, and that's a great option for them.
Yeah, it is. Which, of course, that is, you know, we were talking about proprietary whole widget solutions. BlackBerry is the other proprietary whole widget solution competing with Apple. And note that they're doing pretty well still, despite the fact that Apple is now bigger than they are.
Yeah, they are doing really well. And it's kind of telling, though, that Apple could get bigger than BlackBerry so quickly, because BlackBerry has years of experience before Apple jumped into the smartphone game.
By that same argument, Android, as an operating system, has passed up both of them in, you know, half the time that that iPhone's been around.
That's true, but Android also has the benefit of being distributed through a lot of different manufacturers, whereas the iPhone comes from Apple and the BlackBerry comes from RIM, and that's it.
True. True enough. True enough. And be that as it may, I mean, the numbers, I mean, when it's 59% from Apple, 59% of iPhone owners who are loyal to iOS – compared to, you know, 24% of Android. I mean that's just crushing. Or I'm sorry, 24% for Symbian and 28% of Android owners. It's just crushing. And you know, Android fans talk about how wonderful and kick butt the open thing is, and Apple's control sucks, and meh. Yet their users don't like their devices.
Well, I would venture to say that at least some of those users are disappointed with the fact that they bought an Android device and then found out after the fact that what they bought doesn't even come with the current version of Android OS, and so they don't have access to all the apps that newer devices have. And then they find out that they have to go through a specific Android store and not the version that has what they want. And the fragmentation, I think, is a big problem for Android.
Do you have time for an anecdote?
Of course I do.
I have an anecdote that sort of encapsulates the problems and benefits of both platforms. So Full Tilt Poker, some of our listeners may know that I'm a big poker fan. Full Tilt Poker is now offering their Rush Poker, which is, we'll get into that another time, but you can basically play one table of Rush Poker on Android. So they've got a little app, log in with your account, and you know, you can play one table at a time on your phone. Pretty cool. And You can't do this on iPhone. Why can't you do this on iPhone? Because Apple, I don't know that Full Tilt has ever asked. However, I say with utter confidence that I believe all of the poker sites would like to have iPhone apps and have probably developed to some degree or another an iPhone app, and Apple has said no. I'm comfortable saying that, but please note that I haven't actually talked to anyone about it yet. Okay?
Okay.
Fair enough. So, knowing that he could do this on Android, he wanted to put it on his girlfriend's Android phone. And the Android phones have this cool thing where you can use, if they have an infrared the scanner on them, and some of them do, you can scan a barcode, or maybe you can even just take a photograph of a barcode, and it'll just immediately download the app associated with that barcode.
Which is actually really cool.
It is. It actually is really cool. You can't really, there's actually not much point in that. I don't know. One way or another, it's not something that iPhone really needs or has. And so he was all excited to do this for a Thanksgiving trip. Well, he turns around to go do it, and he's having problems. It won't work. It won't work. It won't work. Well, it turns out that the Android phone that they bought 3 weeks ago still has version 2.1 of Android on it. So which doesn't support this feature.
Nice.
And 2.2 has been out for how many months? 2.2 has been out for like 6 months, I think.
Yeah, it's been out several months.
For quite a while. And it's absolutely outrageous outrageous that they could buy a new phone that didn't have the latest version of Android on it. And it's a hassle to upgrade it.
Well, yeah, so, because a lot of carriers are controlling whether you can upgrade your Android device. And in some cases, they're saying no, even though the upgrades are available.
Right, and even though the upgrade would work on that device. So here we have in one story, we've got something that iPhone owners would never have to deal with, which is confusion over what can be done. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, we have something that's really cool on the Android phone that you can't do on iPhone, which is play poker, because online poker is a gray area at best in the legal realm, and Apple is saying no to it. Again, I don't know, but I think it's a pretty safe assumption. And at the the third time, we've got a demonstration of the fragmentation and the complete lack of any kind of control over the end product that's going out, so that, you know, people sometimes don't even know what they have. It's like everything all wrapped into one, just that one little story.
Yeah, it is. And that's a sad state of affairs, I think, because in the end, it's the consumers that are getting hurt. And that's just uncool.
Yeah, and you know, hurt maybe a bit, you know, of a harsh word, but I wouldn't put up with it. As I mean, that to me is an actually that to me is why I accept Apple's walled garden, because I appreciate all the benefits. For instance, you know, having a centralized location to buy apps and having everything updated and having my updates delivered to me in an easy fashion and knowing which updates the device will support, all of those things. You know, that's why I accept the level of control that Apple exerts that precludes me being able to play poker on my phone.
Well, at least when you're using an iPhone, even though you can't play the poker games you want, you know that you have access to your software updates. You know where to go to find applications. You know that you'll be able to see all the applications, and you'll be able to install them.
Yes. Yeah, all those things. That's why I love the end result of Apple's walled garden and whole widget approach.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with it. I'm mostly fine with it as well. And if I wasn't, well, then I wouldn't be using an iPhone.
Right. And so I guess the last thing to say about this other story is that Android may have gotten bigger, but it's not getting bigger because people like it more. It's availability and as you said, the sheer number of devices and manufacturers that are making those devices that are available. And, of course, the fact that you can in the U.S. you can only get the iPhone with one carrier.
Right. So, yeah. Okay. Now, to me, saying, look, you can get Android devices a lot more places, so that's why it's selling more, is not like a cop-out or trying to justify, well, the iPhone's still better. It's just a matter of this is how it is. There are more places potentially to get an Android device. Therefore, there would be more people buying that.
It's true. And again, you know, I have no doubt. I have no doubt that salesmen at competing carriers, and in some cases even within AT&T, have said the word today. I bet the phrase "it's just like an iPhone" has been said at least 1,000 times by a salesperson.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people actually are saying that. I mean, I've been in phone stores where, you know, because occasionally I'll go in. Like if I have to go to the mall to go to the Apple store, I do go into the phone stores that are in the mall. Because I like to see what's there. I like to compare the other products to the iPhone. And the number of times that I hear people telling customers, it's just like an iPhone. Or, well, like the iPhone, you can do this. It's always a comparison to the iPhone.
Right. And there's two aspects of that. for most consumers, that's actually probably true. Because they'll never really use those features. You know, they at the risk of being the elitist pig that I am, they think they need a smartphone, but they really don't. And right. So for a lot of people that are told that and then end up buying some crappy Android device, it might as well be true. And then the rest of them are going to end up being disappointed. So some percentage of those people will be disappointed.
Oh, sure. Just as some percentage of iPhone users end up being disappointed.
Yeah, because, notice that apparently 41% of iPhone owners, according to that survey, do not necessarily plan on staying loyal to iOS with their next purchase.
Now, I have found it interesting that the handful of people I know that bought iPhones then got totally pissed off for whatever reason, and based on what I know, they were pissed off at the wrong things and decided they were going to dump their iPhone, get away from AT&T and go to Verizon, and they're going to get a Droid or whatever Android phone that they wanted. None of them are happy. Every one of them thinks that their Android phone is a complete piece of crap. And I have a feeling, just based on the grumbling I've heard, that most of them are now realizing that Verizon isn't any better for them than AT&T was.
Right.
So, so that's not going to garner any product loyalty right there.
No, I in the end, we can close this out, I think, by waxing reminiscent on the fact that we have both said that we wish that Google had gone the whole widget route with Android. And that at the very least that they exerted the type of control that Microsoft exerts over Windows. I don't think we said that before, but I'm saying it now.
Well, I think we've said something along those lines. At least we have projected the sentiment.
So, yay us!
Yeah, go us! Yeah. All right. So that's probably about the place where I should go. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And feel free to follow me on Twitter. That would be twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/tmobrian. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is by Cashfly, and the bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.